and welcome to the Handbag Designer 101 podcast with your host, Emily Blumenthal, handbag designer expert and handbag fairy godmother, where we cover everything about handbags from making, marketing, designing, and talking to handbag designers and industry experts about what it takes to make a successful handbag. Welcome, my sweet Darshan Gress, to Handbag Designer 101, the podcast. Darshan, you are a TV and fashion stylist, costume designer. I defer to you to pretty much everything that's going on TV because I just assume you style every good thing I see on TV. So I believe that to be true, and I'm sticking with it.
Well, thank you for having me. This is such an honor. Thank you.
So we go way back to when we were mere toddlers and you were styling on MTV. 100 years ago.
Oh my God.
When people cared MTV.
That was 150 years ago and definitely makes me feel old when I think about the good old TRL days and being in Times Square and dressing Carson or styling Carson. Crazy. So that was a while ago.
Oh my God. So how many years were you doing that? How did you fall into this job that so many people, so many of my students are like, I would kill for this?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was definitely one of those kids. We're getting back to junior high, high school, where when people said, what do you want to do when you grow up? And people are like, I want to be a dancer. I want to be a doctor. And my thing was, I want to dress people on television. So that really was like, it was very focused, very calculated. And it stemmed from just the love of styling people, which truly, I think every good stylist will say, they started with dressing their mom or their dad or their friends back when they were younger. That joy of like working out somebody's style. And I worked with my mother, but also all of
first client
started. Yeah, my mom was the OG client, but also her friends. She would take me, I mean, literally I'd be like 13 or 14 years old. And my mom would take me and her friends to the mall so that I could help style them and create their wardrobe. And it really was about creating style, not just like putting on the nicest little outfit. The thing about dressing people in television, there's a specific story to that, which I won't go into detail, but I saw a behind the scenes video clip on that show Entertainment Tonight. I don't know if you remember, you know, and they did a tour of a wardrobe department of a TV show. And it was all about dressing the characters. And I was sitting next to my dad and I was like, I want to do that. So that's where the idea of dressing people on television came about. But really, my love is styling. And actually, over the years, I've grown an array of personal clients that don't even step foot in front of the TV. So that's really how it started. And then in terms of starting in television, specifically, I had an internship at VH1. And my boss at VH1 ended up, after my internship was over about a year later, she left VH1 and went over to MTV, Susan. And Susan ended up calling me within a week or so of her starting and saying, I need to staff this department. And that's how it started for me at MTV.
Wow. So you are like an OG of an OG.
Yeah, you could say.
Wow. How many years were you there?
I think I was there for about just shy of 3 years. There was a period of time where I thought in my own, you know, personal goals and what I was thinking about in the future, I had started to think about, I think I'm ready to move out of this and move into either another TV show or working with more personal clients. And then 9/11 happened. And so that did not happen. I thank the good Lord above that I'm ready to leave before that happened, because as we all know, the world collapsed and there were literally celebrity stylists who had come through the studio at MTV prior to that, who I'd become friends with, that dressed all the celebrities. And they were calling me, asking me if there was any jobs at MTV, because there was just literally no work. So I was so grateful. I feel like that was like God protecting me, because I literally was at a point where I thought I was going to not walk away on bad terms, but just say, I need to move on.
Like next.
And I didn't. Yeah. And so I stayed there probably about a good, I think, oh, actually, my very last day at MTV was a year later on 9/11, the year after. I remember sitting in the office. It was creepy and it was very late at night because I was cleaning out my office. I continued to work with MTV in that department for years afterwards because I left on good terms. It wasn't about I hated the job. I mean, the job was the most nutty job, I think, to date that I've ever had. The hours were crazy. But yeah, I left on good terms and I continued to work on VMAs with them. And I did a House of Style with them years later. I think that was the last. They relaunched it one time.
I remember.
Probably, I don't even know, like 10 years ago, I did that. So yeah, so it was, I was there for a while.
So, I mean, I think one of the immediate key takeaways, and I think this also speaks to why you and I are still friends, is that you're just such a stand-up individual and such a hard worker. And but I think, like anything, recognizing the value of relationships and keeping those relationships and being nice to everyone and being respectful to everyone and always realizing you're never above everyone, anyone, doesn't matter where. And even the most difficult of clients, to smile through that and realize what they're going through isn't something personal to me. And that's, in my opinion, that's the key to your success, because other than being insanely good at what you do, you're just a good person. And I've always loved that about you. Just saying.
You know, in keeping with that, I really do believe, you know, sometimes success isn't about the person having the best outcome, meaning the bag. For example, some of the best bags that are the most successful are not the greatest bags out there, but there's something else that is leading that success, whether it's their marketing, whether it's now, whether it's gone viral on TikTok or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But like, there's so many factors that play into why somebody is successful. And I also have to say, I truly believe success is not based on your resume or based on finances. I do believe it's based on feelings. Mm-hmm. And so
connection.
I think it's so important as a handbag designer, as a stylist, as anybody, the measure of success, comparing yourself is never, you're always going to fall short if you're comparing yourself to anybody.
Yep.
But success is really figuring out what you truly want and pursuing it. And to me, the success is taking action to pursue it. And it goes back to, like, I didn't give up. I mean, I really pounded the pavement really early on in my career. There's one story that I won't get into really early on. And it happened to be with how I got into MTV with the boss that I had. There was a little hiccup in the way years prior to that, but I stayed in good relationship with everybody. I didn't talk poorly about anybody, because you never know what somebody's going to say when you're not in the room. And so it doesn't help. You know, it's like, I always want to show good faith no matter what, you know, I mean, wrong is wrong, but I still, like, it doesn't serve me to talk about the bad. What I want to do is move forward and learn from any experience that wasn't so great or painful. And so, yeah. Success to me, it's really based on a feeling.
So I want to just get into, because there's so, we could literally talk, you know, until the sun goes up and down. And I apologize for using the word that I've told my kids not to overuse. I think I've said literally about 7 times already. So that's ding. It's definitely an abused word. But I want to talk a little bit about what you do now and the shows you've worked on. Then get into how you work with your personal clients and all this going back to handbags, obviously. But, you know, you style and have styled a lot of, and were costume dressed, a lot of incredible shows, a lot of incredible people. TV, you don't usually need handbags or pull handbags, but I know they're needed in some shape or form. And also how you work with your personal clients in terms of pulling bags and how to guide them from them desiring labels and trying to convince them to try something new. So can you just jump right into all that good stuff?
So that was a lot of a question.
I'm good for it. So you want to talk about, like, the shows you've designed, you've dressed and so forth.
Yeah. So for me, it's interesting. You know, my title is costume designer on most of my shows. Union shows, the title is costume designer. You can think of that as a fashion stylist. I really niched down and realized what I love to do was style real people. And so that translated into the TV shows I worked on or have worked on. MTV, for example, I was styling Carson Daly or some of the other VJs, if you will. So I really dressed real people on television. My niche is dressing the hosts and judges of essentially reality shows, which back in the day, I would have been mortified to hear me 20 years from now saying that's what I worked on. No longer am I embarrassed about that because, for example, most recently, you know, I'm the costume designer for Project Runway, which is the hosts and judges of the shows. I don't always on all of my shows dress head to toe every single person on the show, but I coordinate the entire department. And for this last season that just aired, the 20th season, I worked with Nina Garcia on her outfit, you know, for the entire season.
Wow.
What an honor, the editor-in-chief of Elle Magazine. In terms of bags, it's interesting. And I don't remember if this is how we met, but for me, it's rare that I use a bag on a TV show because, as you can imagine, the host of Top Chef is not holding a bag while she's in the kitchen. And same for Nina when she's sitting in the chair watching a runway show. But back at MTV, I used to do trend segments. And actually, there was a designer that I met because of a bag, Christina Caruso. She doesn't do bags right now, but she's just launched the most, not just, but she relaunched her accessory line, and she has the most beautiful accessories. I love her to pieces. And we've stayed in touch with over the years. Talk about long relationships. But the way that we got to know each other is her items were featured on Sex and the City. She saw me on TV and on MTV doing a trend segment and reached out to me. And I ended up using her bag in one of my trend segments on MTV.
So the story that Christina was in the New York Times for the Sex and the City story was because of me, because my bag was featured in the Sex and the City lead-in story in 2003 from Ruth LaFerla. And Ruth said, if you want this story, you need to pull and give me other designers that had their bags or products featured on the show. So I went through and pulled two other designers, comma, and me. So that's the connection.
What?
And he was also on Project Accessory because I was the one that was part of casting.
Oh, I didn't know you were part of casting for that.
But
I mean, Christina and I go so far back to the time when you and I go back. I mean, the connections in the industry are, you know, when you start to connect the dots, it's a very small, it feels big, but if you move to New York City and you start to work in the industry, you start to see how small it is and how valuable it is to stay in contact with
and
everybody.
And to be nice to everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. So getting back to bags. So, you know, like I said, I don't normally on my particular shows, it's very rare that I get the opportunity to tie in a bag, basically, unless there's a trend segment or I'm doing a, you know, I've worked on fashion shows where I've had to style out bags, but it's very rare. But in terms of my personal clients, oh my gosh, it's part of the look. Like, you know, I think everybody thinks about their wardrobe first, but usually they don't give thought to their handbag, their coat. The shoes, yes, there's usually a plethora of shoes in most people's closet, but the handbags and coats tend to be an afterthought, and it can ruin an entire outfit. Mm-hmm. And so for me, handbags or purses, or I sound like a granny, handbags are so incredibly important to the overall image and the style of an outfit. It literally, as I said, can make or break. And in terms of my clients, first of all, and it applies to wardrobe, it applies to shoes, there's a little more flexibility, I believe, with handbags, but I do think that building your foundation first, and this is part of the process I take personal clients through, which is a style foundation. We identify what their actual style is, their personal style, their how they want to identify. And then we build a core wardrobe that's based on essentially basics, if you will, but not boring isn't basics. They're the glue to your wardrobe. So when you go into your closet, you know you've got this fabulous eye candy blazer, but you've got the basic jean or the basic black pant or whatever it is to tie into it. Same can be said about a bag. I do believe it's so important to have bags that are a little more neutral, if you will, that are not such eye candy. And that's where you start. But on the flip side of this, and this is, I'm going to show you a bag. I pulled it out just for today. A bag I've had in my closet for over 20 years. I think bags are probably one of the number one places where clients and your audience can invest in. Because yes, trends go in and out. For example, the Fendi baguette, but hello, last year, the Fendi baguette was trending again. I mean, and I don't think that unless it's like uber, uber trendy, a year later, it might die a little and you might look like you're wearing a dated bag. But in terms of a classic expensive investment piece and it's eye candy, you can carry it for as long as possible. So I pulled this out just for you.
Amazing.
This bag, I guess it would be considered vintage. I forget what the actual years of vintage, like how many years it has to be.
Yeah,
I think I got this and it's got a little wear and tear. It's Christian Dior. I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah.
It was when the bag
is. This silhouette is so hot right now.
Yeah, actually it's, what's crazy is I just was in Paris just a month ago and they had this bag sitting in the shop. It wasn't my bag. It was a bag. And I said to it was a vintage shop. And I was like, oh my God,
how much had that bag?
I forget. I want to say they were selling it for around, the vintage prices in Paris are so much better than they are here in LA or right. in New York. I have, or on the real, which don't get me started. But I want to say it was under 2000 at least. So, I mean, and that sounds like a lot of money. I mean, bags that, I will say this, there seems to be a trend, I hate to say that, on vintage bags, like
the circular economy right now is insane.
Yeah. Luxury. I mean, I'm seeing vintage luxury pieces, whether it's clothes, bags, whatever, going for more on a retail price than what you'd find if you go into, you know, Saks and start shopping for a bag, which to some degree I have some issue with, but I understand it. I, once again, I believe it's like an investment. It's kind of like your old school when people used to talk about investing in watches, you know, right. which is still an investment piece. So anyways, I really believe with clients, I love having bags. They're neutrals and you only need a few. And that means they can go with almost anything you wear. But having these kind of eye candy bags, you know, this one's got purple and green and it's got, you know, pony hair and python. I'm sorry for anybody out there that this is probably the real deal because it was over 25 years ago that I got that bag. I'm not so sure I would buy it now. But those eye candy pieces are the things that sort of give like a little spice to your outfit. I've definitely worked outfits around a handbag for my clients. They get a fabulous bag and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so inspirational. Let's style an entire look.
How do you deal with your clients and how do you get them? And I say get them in the pedestrian way. How do you convince them to invest in a brand that isn't a label? Because the clients with whom you work are at a different socioeconomic level. If they're employing you to come in and do their closet and so forth, then these people that you are working with are in some cases early adopters because they have you to allow them to take these risks that they probably wouldn't have the courage to do on their own. And so you're the one, I'm assuming, bringing a lot of stuff in front of them that they've never seen or wouldn't normally get on their own. So how do you deal with that? And what are some of the brands that you're looking at for inspiration?
Yeah, I will say this. What's interesting, and you know, my clients aren't the kind that come to me normally. There have been some that need like full makeovers, that are fashion clueless, that have no idea how to dress themselves, their bodies, and they don't know labels. Like most of my clients, they love fashion. They have a closet full of clothes. I mean, the number one thing is I have a closet full of clothes and nothing to wear. And they just need that fresh perspective. So to answer your question, most of my clients, they shop more than me. I have to say, shopping is not my favorite part of what I do, which I know that might sound shocking to most people, but my love is styling and having the clothes already shopped, whether it's somebody else, like an assistant or myself. Not to say I don't like shopping and I love the hunt and actually I love it all, but it is truly, if I compare it to what I do, the styling part is my favorite part. So my point is that my clients usually have a very key, like they already know they want to invest in that Chanel bag or the YSL bag or whatever it is. For me, you know, there are certain bags that seem to be that wear out quicker, if you will, because they're literally worn every day, whether it's that black bag or a silver bag. I think silver and gold are two neutrals, if you will. I think like a nude bag, a red bag, a, you know, a black and white, and also just a pop of color, like a red bag. I know red is trending right now, but red to me is always going to be on trend. Like having an amazing red bag is always going to be great. And it's a bit neutral with your outfit.
If you ever wanted to start a handbag brand and didn't know where to start, this is for you. If you had dreams of becoming a handbag designer but aren't trained in design, this is for you. If you have a handbag brand and need strategy and direction, this is for you. I'm Emily Blumenthal, handbag designer expert and handbag fairy godmother, and this is the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass. Over the next 10 classes, I will break down everything you need to know to make, manufacture, and market a handbag brand, broken down to ensure that you will not only skip steps in the handbag building process, but also to save money to avoid the learning curve of costly mistakes. For the past 20 years, I've been teaching at the top fashion universities in New York City, wrote the Handbag Designer Bible, founded the Handbag Awards, and created the only Handbag Designer podcast. I'm going to show you, like I have countless brands, to create in this in-depth course from sketch to sample to sale, whether you're just starting out and don't even know where to start or begin, or if you had a brand and need some strategic direction, the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass is just for you. So let's get started, and you'll be the creator of the next it bag. Join me, Emily Blumenthal, in the Handbag Designer 101 Masterclass. So be sure to sign up at emilyblumenthal.com/masterclass and type in the code podcast to get 10% off your masterclass today.
But with those outfits or with those bags, I tend to gravitate unless, you know, and the truth is my one-on-one clients, yes, they do have resources probably different than some of the people that don't work one-on-one with me at that high scale level. They can invest in higher price points, but I love bags. Like I still love a Furla bag. You know, I still love bags that are great design. And I say basic and I don't mean boring, but just are neutrals and they're not so trendy. Also, the other thing that I have found that is so important because my clients, this is one thing that I have to educate clients on. I ask them to put the bag on their shoulder with their coats on. So many times I have clients that have a closet full of amazing bags and they never wear them. And I already know why, but usually if it's a New Yorker, you're wearing a coat, you know, 3/4 of the year, and you need to be able to put that bag over your shoulder comfortably. Also, it can't be heavy. It's interesting. I actually got a call from my mom a few days ago about asking me, I had given her a gift for years ago for the holidays. It was a purse and it was a designer purse, Coach. It wasn't too high end, but you know, it's a nice label. And I'd actually gotten it at a sample sale. So I do remember it was still pricey at the sample sale because it was a one-off kind of piece. It wasn't something that was in the regular line in the store. It's this beautiful hunter green with white stitching. But it is a big bag and it's got a strap. It does sit over her shoulders, although a little snug with the coat. But what she called me about was like, Darshan, I tried to wear the bag the other day. It's so heavy. I realize now why I never wear it. And, you know, shame on me for buying a heavy bag for my poor mother who's half my size.
The leather is so dense. With them.
Yeah. And there's a handle and there's hardware on that particular, there's a lot of gold hardware all over the bag. It is just like, it's truly a heavy bag and it's a beautiful bag. And my mom even said, I love this bag. And I'm like, Mom, you know my phrase, it's okay to love something and leave it, meaning get it out of your closet if you're not wearing it. And it was so cute because she asked my permission because it was a gift from me. And I was like, if you're not wearing it, get rid of it. So functionality is really important, I think, even if it's like an eye candy bag. I think it's kind of crazy how, you know, the trends where you get a bag that's like this, you know, super teeny and you can't put your phone or let alone a credit card in it. That's great for on the runway. It's great if you're going to walk Fashion Week and you're a fashion editor. But the reality is most people need to put their cell phone. You need to think about what you need to put in your bag. You need to put even if it's going out at night, there's a few key essentials and one of them is your cell phone. Because if you're wearing a dress, for example, there's no pockets in your dress. So,
right. You know, there was in the early 2000s when Marc Jacobs was at his heyday, those bags of his, I mean, we used to joke that it should come with like an orthopedist number because not only was the leather heavy, but the buckles were heavy, the hardware was heavy. So even empty, and then the straps, they weren't wide enough to hang on your shoulder and they weren't long enough to make as a crossbody because people didn't do that back then.
Yeah.
So the retail anthropological research was so lacking that even as amazing the Stan bag, even as on trend it was too goddamn heavy to wear. So aspirationally,
I still have an old school Marc Jacobs collection bag. And yeah, it's heavy. I love it. And it's like the leather is so broken in, but it's a heavy bag. And actually, I've been doing what I do with my closet or my clients for the last few months, both in New York and LA. And I've been going through and just like getting rid of so much stuff that I'm like, I'm never going to wear this. And I have to say, I hung on to the Marc Jacobs bag for sentimental reasons. But the truth is, I probably in the next round of editing my closet will probably have to love it and let it go.
People like you terrify me because my closet is literally choked. And, you know, I've thought about this, especially now, like if I had to run out of my house, what would I take? Like what clothing articles would I say are the most important? I mean, granted, we can live without everything, your family, da 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 da. But if I was to say, like, you're given one suitcase to pack up your best pieces, what would they be? And like, God damn it, my closet, it's a disaster. You know, I think we always need someone like you to come in and be like the mirror, be like, you don't need it. Doesn't fit you. Get rid of it. You're not going to wear it.
I like editing people's closet more than I like shopping. So the pecking order of what I like to do, it's styling and then editing people's closet because it's so liberating. I think that gives me kind of the most joy because the area that I get the most resistance on when I start to work with clients, and it's part of the process. Like there's a whole process of how I work with somebody, especially the very first time if I've never stepped foot in their closet or worked with them. I will not work with a client if all they want is for me to go out immediately and shop. It's never going to happen because it doesn't serve them. I know their end result will be a year from now, they're going to still have a closet full of clothes and feel like they have nothing to wear because they didn't edit what is in there. They can't see what they have. And I get it. It's an emotional process. It is. I just recently, like I said, just did it. And there's still pieces that I'm like, I can't believe I got rid of that. But you know what? I can see everything in my closet, which is amazing. Like,
my dress. I can't see anything. No.
You need a closet edit session.
Honey, I'm like already having anxiety. Name your food. You can come over. I'll buy you whatever you want. We can get a whole buffet spread. I don't know. I'm already terrified, like, talking about this. Where, like, when you cull someone's closet, where do you have them deposit their leftovers? Are you attached to a website? Do you donate? How do you handle that?
Each person is different. A lot of my clients do have higher end price point pieces. So just because somebody's getting rid of something doesn't mean that it's shredded. It's that ratty sweatshirt from college. You know, a lot of times it's actually pieces that we both love. Like, I'm like, I love that blazer, but you just simply are never going to wear this again, especially after COVID. There's so many things that a lot of us, like the transition is massive, and maybe one day you will wear it, but for now it's got to go. So the places that obviously Goodwill is is probably the number one place that I drop off things, but I have recently been researching other places, and I don't want to publicly talk about them because I haven't used them yet, but I am looking at places where we can drop off fabric. So even if it's like t-shirts,
drop off what?
Fabric.
That
can be recycled and for a more sustainable thing, because I don't like the idea of just throwing things away is really hard. I think it's emotionally hard. And I also think it's filling up our landfills. And the same with Goodwill. Not everything actually, as we know, I mean, I have clients that are like, oh, I should send this to Goodwill. And I'm like, I know I just said most of the stuff is nice, but sometimes it does have a stain on it. And I was like, no one should be buying that. No, we're not going to give that to Goodwill. We're getting rid of that. No one should be buying that. So I have actually started to research, and I have one company that I am working with right now, but I haven't like worked with them enough to actually say their name.
I interviewed Camille Tagle from Fab Scrap, and I love them and love everything they recommend and support, and they take dead stock and so forth. So big believer in them.
I'll have to get that info after this. I'm really, there was some place that I worked with before the pandemic, and they did the recycling of everything. After the pandemic, they shut down. Like, I can't find them. I don't, it wasn't like a building or an office. And so that's why more recently I've had to research newer places, because I'm like, I don't know where to take any of this stuff.
As long as we're on this topic, let's just go back to the buying process. When you are looking for inspiration and to shop for your clients, and obviously this is about knowing them and understanding them, are you shopping at the places where they would only buy, or do you go to flea markets? Do you go to thrift stores? Do you look for some key items and pieces? Like, where are you looking for inspiration or newness and innovation?
Yeah, I love vintage shopping. I mean, and it's interesting. I have one particular client that actually is quoted in her book as not liking vintage. And I think she was more referring to furniture as opposed to clothes. But I know her philosophy when we first started working together, because she equated it with not so much yucky, but like it didn't feel right to her. And she
I've heard people call it like ABC gum, like already been chewed. So a lot of people it's just closed that way.
And also, let's be real. Shopping vintage is equivalent to shopping at an outlet. It's needle in the haystack. You cannot go into a vintage store with the same itemized list that you would going into Burgies, as I call it, or jumping in. But because it's hit or miss, basically. So I love shopping vintage, but it's really rare that I actually shop vintage for my clients, because usually with my clients, it's a very, as I keep saying, there's a process. I know exactly what I'm looking for. Now, it's not exact, like the exact label or the exact, but I know in terms of the basic pieces what I'm looking for. And then in terms of eye candy pieces, if you will, like those standout pieces, I know what colors they're needing and everything. And that's really hard to do in a vintage place. A lot of times, if I see something while I'm in a vintage store, I'll take a picture and I can send that to a VIP client and be like, hey, I just saw this. This is perfect for you. And, you know, because they're at that VIP level, we'll work that way. But it's very rare because it's not efficient for my time and their time, basically. Also, vintage stores.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, the other issue with it is most vintage stores don't have a return policy. I'll be perfectly honest. You can't buy it, show it to your client, and then return it. There are some stores that do out on memo consignment, but you know, they kind of, especially here in LA, they treat it more like a pull for TV show, which personal clients don't have a budget where they can pay for 20% of what you're pulling, even if they don't keep anything, whereas a TV show has a budget. So it's a little more complex. And I wish, you know, I actually have a friend who is the queen of vintage, and she is the quirkiest, coolest, down-to-earth person I've ever met. And I've actually started to lean on her to see where I can start to work more with vintage places, but it is challenging. It takes a lot more time and effort on my behalf, which I don't mind doing, but that has to factor into the equation of when I'm working it with somebody.
Okay, last two questions to wrap up. Are you taking pictures of vintage, let's just speak to bags per se, and then sending it to your client and saying, do you like the look and feel of this? Let's go find a bag that is of its likeness. And if a new designer wants to get their bag into the hands of someone like you, what can they do to get noticed?
So first question, it's interesting. There's a vintage show, a monthly vintage show here in LA called Pickwick, and it's got multiple vendors. Some of them are freestanding stores that come and do a little pop-up. Some of them are, they just come and go to these vintage shows. Handbags are the number one thing that I take pictures of and send to clients, because a bag fits, you know what I mean? Vintage clothing, it's really hard to make sure that it's going to fit really well. It's harder, you know. So bags are the easiest thing. And in terms of shopping vintage, jewelry and bags are the number one. And scarves. I love getting scarves at vintage places. But bags, yes, I 100% take pictures. If I see an amazing bag, and actually the one that got away, there was a bag at the last, or maybe it was two, I think I missed the last vintage show, but two vintage shows back, there was a bag that I saw. I sent it to my client because I thought she would like it. She did like it, but in the end, she didn't get it. But I actually really liked it. And I waffled a few days and it sold. It didn't sell at the show, but it sold. The vendor had actually gone to New York for another show and sold it.
Yeah, there was Manhattan Vintage this past weekend. So we were just there shopping that because kind of have to.
So to me, I mean, I love vintage pieces if they're in good quality. I mean, one of the reasons vintage or thrift store, if you will, that name scares most people is because they equate it with a time period. They think it's going to look kitschy, costumey, or you're getting something that looks like it's from the 60s. For me, that's not my personal style. So I would probably, you know, yeah, I might pull up a dress or something that is a reflection of the 60s.
But you think as a designer for inspiration, it's good to go thrifting or vintage because you can always find something that could potentially be inspiration for something new and on trend.
For, most definitely. And I also think when you see it as a vintage piece, then you see the longevity of that silhouette. You know, I mean, it's really about the silhouette, not necessarily the color at that point, but like seeing what stands the test of time. And then, like you said, you see this silhouette and you're like, oh my gosh, that bag is 30 years old. I love that. That looks modern. I know that if I'm in, you know, a store now and I go to Neiman Marcus and that silhouette's there, it's going to look good 20 years from now because it stood the test of time.
And just to wrap up, if someone wanted to get their hand, a bag in your hands, can they follow you? Can they reach out to you? Can they DM you? So you know they exist. How can they follow and find you? So if we have any incredible bag designers out there to say, I'd love to get my bag on your clients or for your next show that you might need to pull style design that may require bags, how can they find you to do so?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, the probably the easiest way to find me is my full name, Darshan Gress, is all of my social media handles. And you'll see me on Instagram as Darshan Gress. And I love getting DMs. I get DMs all the time from designers. Usually, you know, if somebody DMs me, I don't click on links, to be perfectly honest, from a DM, because I just never know. I don't usually click on DMs, the links and DMs, because you just never know. So I usually give them my generic email via the DM.
So the best way is that they can find you on Instagram at DARSHANGRESS, and then they should send you images or PDFs or so forth, or lookbooks, because you won't click on a link because links are shady.
Yeah. Yeah. Feel free to DM me. And if, you know, it sounds legit, I will send you a private email address. You can send me images that way.
Amazing. Darshan, you are a ray of sunshine and a star that I continue to follow. Thank you so much for being part of Handbag Designer 101, the podcast. I know this was extraordinarily educational, and I know all of our fans and followers will definitely see the same thing, because you really have given us a great insider look in terms of what you look for as a personal stylist and also as a costume designer. So thank you so much for being part of it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a joy.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate and review and follow us on every single platform at Handbag Designer. Thanks so much. See you next time.